Hi, guys.
Hi there.
What's going on?
You know, time.
Doing our usual thing, time after time.
Well,
yeah,
these two sneaky gents,
Mark, Mickey, and Joseph went back in time when I said, I bet you kids cannot guess what my favorite time travel movie is. And they both almost simultaneously said, time after time!
Well,
and I went, holy shit, oh my God, how did you know? And Joseph said, we traveled back in time, forward in time, knew what your answer was, and then, okay.
The truth of it was, and Mickey can back me up on this, before a recording several weeks ago, we were talking about this time travel episode, and you said,
yes, we did. Okay, I'm just an idiot. I should have changed it. I said, no, my favorite time travel episode is...
And that's how Harry Houdini did it.
Yes. Time Bandits is a very close second.
Yes.
Very close second. But I must bow to the superiority of Time Bandits.
There's something to be said for David Warner as Jack the Ripper.
Are you kidding me?
And he's in
both. And by the way, both of those movies have David Warner as the villain.
That's right. Really true. Really true. Time travel David Warner, ladies and gentlemen.
Yep.
Blowing all this beautiful information. Let's get going.
All right.
Gentlemen, let's see. Time travel. Here we go.
Mankind is born and follows an inevitable path to his end. Throughout time, man has always wanted to go beyond his mortal lifespan to see what lies ahead, or to go back and change something in the past, or to see something great that has happened. Who knows, maybe manipulating the future. Mankind lives and dies in a timeline. Inevitably, we work towards that end. But can we change that? Can we do something to alter it? Ladies and gentlemen, tonight here in the Lobot Lounge, we discuss time travel. This is a bit of a time travel in itself, as you are listening to this podcast at any time in the future after we've recorded it. So, inevitably, we, your fellow time travelers, are going to be your guides tonight in time travel, in motion pictures, television, video games, science fiction books. We'll try to cover it all, but it is prolific. Ladies and gentlemen, the gentleman nerds, Mark Finn.
We're sending you back to the future!
Mickey Finn.
President Biff.
Aaron DiOrive.
Oh, God, I don't have a clever follow-up.
I'm Joseph Otinos, your host and emotional touchstone here at the Lobot Lounge. Drinks all around, gentlemen.
Hey!
And now let's talk about time travel.
Oh, time travel. The wonderful, one of the few things that never fails to stir the internet into a light froth, you know?
That's right.
It's just one of my favorite things, you know, because killing Hitler through time travel is almost as prolific on the internet as mentioning Hitler in an argument that you're losing. So, you know.
the question of, you know, could you, if you could go back in time, would you kill Hitler? And, of course, Back to the Future, that both Mark and Mickey mentioned and referenced in their opening, did very, very specifically talk about the consequences of altering something in the past.
Yes.
You just don't know what that's going to do. So while it's tempting to think, yes, I'm going to go back and kill Hitler, who knows what kind of world we'd be living in now if that didn't happen.
I'm always reminded, and of course, you know, we're not going to do this in a linear fashion, and I can tell right now.
No.
We're just going to jump all over the place.
Absolutely.
But I love the idea, and some of the, granted, a lot of this was formed from watching Star Trek, you know. and one of the, like, only good things, okay, about the fifth movie is when the New Age Vulcan Kirk considers it. He offers to find out what's troubling Kirk and take the pain away, right? And
right.
Kirk says, no, I need my pain, you know? And
right.
The whole point being is that we are the sum of our choices, good and bad. And
sure.
One of the best things about Back to the Future was that it introduced into the pop culture zeitgeist, this whole idea of sending things in an alternate direction, you know. When the sports almanac lands, you know, back in 1957, Biff becomes the richest guy. And I just love that you get that sort of offshoot. Like, here's what happens when one guy does all the bad things, you know, and this is how it destroys that little town, you know. Such a wonderful idea to play with. But
And the movie has this wonderful dichotomy of both having the most brilliant and completely idiotic idea in the same idea.
What's the most idiotic idea?
Fading from photographs.
Oh, right.
It's a brilliant storytelling device that still makes you go, what the hell, people?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about that. Now, why, if you think about it, if they never existed, why would the photo itself exist?
Just the fading.
Right. Yeah, but
it's a beautiful meter kind of way.
And that's exactly
doing it
what
for
it is.
Storytelling
that is,
purpose.
That is exactly what
it's
it is.
It's just so
it
completely ludicrous.
It is a cinematic shortcut to let the audience know he's running. It's the ticking clock. He's running out
of
time.
It's a video
time.
Game, yeah.
Correct. That's all it is.
Because
that's all
instead
it
of taking a picture of nothing, the picture itself just wouldn't exist.
Correct.
Nobody would have taken a picture of nothing.
Right. That moment would not have been that moment
fade
without those people in there. Yeah, right. I dug that. I dug the visual cue of, oh, my God, he's fading.
Yeah, it's
brilliant. He's trying to hurry up.
Done. Well, I mean, if you think about it in terms of time and moments in time, Mickey, and I'm going to pull out an Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. reference because I did a really good example of time travel or predicting the future in Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., and I'm not going to go into too much detail. No, just recently.
Oh, okay.
Where scientist, help me out, guys.
Fitz and Simmons?
Yeah, was...
Whichever. I can never remember.
He took
them.
A book, a very thick book, and he took a marker and he drew a diagonal line the front of the book. And he said, it's like this. He said, you can't do it. You can't change the future. Here's why. And he takes it and he flips through the book and he says, this line is running continuously. This is a continuous timeline. And he stops it and he says, one page, that's where we are. All we see is this moment.
Right.
But the rest of it's going to be there.
Yeah, it's fixed.
You know, it's fixed. You can't change it. And, of course, you know, Coulson was like, well, we're going to do this, and this, and we'll make sure this doesn't happen. Because we had the vision. We know what's going to happen. But inevitably, of course, it happened.
Right.
Because you can't change it, the idea in this storyline.
Right.
No matter what you do, it's inevitable. It's going to happen.
Right. All they could do was interpret it incorrectly, which was
sort of the
point of the episode, which was really good. I liked it as well.
And on a side note, because we're jumping all around, that was one of the I'm going to use the word brilliant again. I'm going to use it a lot tonight, probably. The moments with Terminator 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
The first is a closed loop. The second is an open loop where you can
Right.
change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah.
I love the best time travel stories are the ones where the loop closes.
That's the most Twilight Zone.
Well, it's Twilight Zone, and it's also mine and Aaron's favorite time travel movie, Time After Time. You know, the reason why Jack the Ripper stops killing people is because he goes forward in time and gets killed when the time device opens up and sends him to eternity, you know.
Right.
I mean, that's just a fun idea.
What works great, though, there is that he only goes forward in time. In fact, that's I was going to ask all of us to recall what was our first experience with the notion of time travel in any kind of media. Mine, hands down, was the Time Machine, the George Powell Time Machine of 1960. I remember watching that with my sister, and it was like, wow, how cool. I mean, just it never had occurred to me, the concept of moving forward or backward in time. I mean, even though I watched Sherman and Peabody, it never clicked. But for some reason, when he did it in the movie, I was like, oh, wow, he's like going to the far, far future. And this is what
you got the visual cue of the clock going forward.
Yes, which actually I think was also in Sherman and Peabody. But anyway, he got the, you know, it was the whole idea of this is what society would become. He was looking at what we would all, you know, devolve into, et cetera, et cetera. And so it had a really big impact on me, only just, not just for that. It's just a great movie. It's so much fun.
And what we devolved into were the Eloi and the Morlocks.
Yeah.
They were the ones that lived above and the ones that lived below.
But that was my first experience. What about you guys?
I will say with no hesitation that my first mind-blowing time travel what-the-huh was Planet of the Apes.
Yeah.
And everything about Planet of the Apes. Spoiler alert, it's Earth that Taylor and his crew come back to. They go 10,000 years into the future, or 100,000 years into the future, and they come back to Earth, where after nuclear war and generations in you know, what, an eon? How much time is an eon, guys?
A long.
So all this time has passed, and of course, apes now rule and men are the animals. And we find this out at the end when Taylor stumbles on the Statue of Liberty half buried in the sand there on the shores of what was at one point, I assume, the East Coast.
Yeah.
And he loses it, flips out, and of course pounds the sand and screams, "God damn you all to hell, you blew it up. You know, and we had the Forbidden Zone, and we have dolls and bits and pieces and teeth and spectacles, and all the clues are coming together. And Zaius knows. He knows something, that mankind caused this civilization to fall and be risen again. So he's been hiding it, the minister of theology and science. I love the fact that he does both. Brilliant. But then here's where it starts getting really mind-blowing. Because in Beneath the Planet of the Apes, Cornelius and Zira take Taylor's crashed spaceship from the Forbidden Zone and somehow get it to work and take off in it. They actually take off in it with Dr. Milo. They see the Earth be destroyed at the end with the Alpha Omega bomb at the end of Beneath the Planet of the Apes. They go through the same time warp Taylor did and go back in time,
yeah,
to where he left. And they have a child, Caesar by name, who leads the ape revolution, who causes the whole thing to start with to begin with.
Yeah.
So if Taylor had not gone there,
yeah,
they wouldn't have gotten the spaceship to go back, yeah, and get Caesar. And it made my head hurt, and I was only 8.
Well, there's that notion of it's fixed. It's fixed. No matter what anybody did, that is how those events were going to play out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Mark?
I'll tell you, I have, I of course, a huge Bullwinkle fan. I've got all the episodes. I love Sherman and Peabody, and that was one of my all-time favorite things. And, as you all know, I'm very pro-gorilla. Planet of the Apes was seminal for me. The original movie scared the bejesus out of me. I loved it so much. What baked my noodle was kind of a trifecta, and they happened in a sequence. It was time after time in 1979, somewhere in time in 1980, and Time Bandits in 1981.
Yeah.
Those three things, to all together, kind of encompass a sort of a beginner's guide to time travel, you know, things. I was really into horror and stuff like that, and so the Jack the Ripper story with H.G. Wells was just the best thing ever, and that's such a good introduction for all of that.
And for people who don't know, who have never seen this movie, it's the same guy who did Wrath of Khan.
Yeah. Nick,
the same director.
Right. And so, and then Time, or Somewhere in Time, which is a Richard Matheson novel, which stars Christopher Reeve and Jane Seymour, is one of the ones that will really mess you up.
Oh, I was so sad when he found the penny. And I was like, no.
Well, and because you know, there comes a point, at least, you know, at the age of, let's see, 1980, I was 11. I was watching this because I kept having, I really wanted Christopher Reeve to, like, put on the Superman costume.
Yeah.
And I just knew that was going to happen if I hung in with it. Well, you get tied up into the story. And in true Richard Matheson / Twilight Zone fashion, that gut punch at the end just sent you reeling, you know. And then Time Bandits was sort of like, you know, that kind of completes the loop. It's all the pop culture stuff. It's all it's all this, you know, interesting, let's go to different places and do the things we want to do. And having it end with literally a Deus Ex Machina is was to me, you know, kind of the most interesting thing in the world. I love the ending where Sean Connery gets on the fire truck, winks at him, and drives off. It's like I always thought that, like, immediately after that, someone's going to show up and go, okay, here's your time travel device. You're now in charge of things. I kept expecting they'd give it to the kid.
Right.
But those three together were sort of the ones that made me go, oh, really, anything is possible as long as you're clever about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Easy.
Yeah.
Mickey?
Uh-oh.
It's all kind of blended to me.
Say it.
Because there's, of course, you know, Time After Time and...
Love Time After Time.
And Terminator.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Which, by the way, they keep threatening to remake Time After Time. They talk about it every year or so.
as long as Tom Hiddleston can play Jack the Ripper, I'm good with it.
Oh, yeah, that's good. Or for that matter, he could play H.G. Wells. I think he'd be a fantastic H.G. Wells.
Heard it here first.
But, yeah. They that movie has gone back and forth as to, let's remake it. Of course, they make all the good ones. They don't remake the ones that need to be remade. But that one, I wouldn't mind. I wouldn't mind seeing how they would treat that subject now, today.
Okay, Mickey, go ahead.
And then, you know, as mentioned, Time Bandits.
Time Bandits.
Yeah.
But there was also a French film called The Jetty.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, I was a film student, and that was one of the films that showed up. And then wandering through... another Terry Gilliam movie called 12 Monkeys. I'm like, I've seen this.
Right.
Yes.
Wait a minute. And unfortunately, that blows the ending for me. But of 12 Monkeys. But it was definitely an homage to that. Then also reading a lot of reading of time travel stuff from Tim Powers, The Anubis Gates, to technically A Wrinkle in Time, and.
Did you ever read David Gerald's The Man Who Folded Himself?
No, that's a great title.
It is one of. It is probably. I don't know if it's the best time travel novel, but this was Gerald during the Star Trek era, so he's kind of at the top of his game. Nowadays it'd be a novella, you know, right? Back then it was, you know, 60,000 words used to be a novel. Anyways, it's a wonderful. Book. I'll only say this one thing. At one point, because he keeps doing it so much, he starts a poker game with himself. at any point in time, you know, that he comes into the room, there's three or four other versions of himself playing poker. And he sits down and plays a hand, and then, you know, whatever. But it's a really, really clever. Yeah.
There's another author who is apparently now a very good author by the name of Simon Hawke. And I apologize, Mr. Hawke, if you ever hear this, but he had some phenomenal ideas, but wasn't that good of a writer yet when he wrote the Time War series. Essentially, the premise is that instead of having wars in the future where it's destructive, they send people back through time into major battles where extra people won't make a difference, and you may never see another enemy soldier. But if you're killed, it counts against your side.
Right.
They create a CIA group for that goes back and makes sure that stuff doesn't get screwed up by people with bad intent. And you wind up with this bad guy in there.
And when were these written?
The 80s, I think.
Okay.
Was that your first exposure to this to time travel? Would you say, or would it be more?
I was reading it early on. Yeah.
Okay.
And I've tried to go back and reread them, and I'm like, I can't get through this. I'm sorry, Mr.
But you know what, gentlemen, I'd like to talk about for a moment the appeal of time travel, just as a concept. Forward or backward, you have two choices. I want to go around the table here and see, would you go backward or forward? If so, why and where would you go? Aaron, could I start with you?
Oh, yeah. Without a doubt, the future. I'd want to go 1,000 years into the future and see what we're doing. The past intrigues me, and certainly there's a lot of stuff I'd like to go back into the past to witness, but just the promise of, you know, I've talked about this theory on Facebook before, but I am one of those tinfoil hat wearing people, excuse me, who have convinced that there are advanced civilizations that they are in fact aware of us, that they probably most likely have in fact visited this planet before, But we're just not ready. We're not ready yet to either know of them, understand them. I don't possibly think we even can.
Oh, no, that's not tinfoil. Tinfoil is when you think that they're out to get you.
No, right, right. Well, but
and you have to wear the hat. You
know, I've read so many theories recently about, you know, the whole, well, there's the paradox, and why aren't we detecting them? And could it be that, like, that we are the first ones that have developed this? And I don't believe that for a second.
And put a thumbnail in paradox. We'll get back to that.
Right. Mm-hmm. Not with the age of the universe and just the vastness of the universe. It is absolutely impossible for me to conceive that there is not very advanced life out there. So 1,000 years from now, I think we will be interacting with these civilizations, at least some of them. And I'd love to see what, you know, do we enter into a Star Trek-like future where we have this happy federation and we're, you know, we're all trading and culture and knowledge and all that kind of stuff, or is it going to be much more Star Warsian, where there's an empire that we have been claimed as part of, and we're now involved in a rebellion of sorts? Or, you know, the future to me is just fascinating. What will it be like?
Interesting. Okay, Mickey, can I go to you?
We're back to the future again.
Oh, going to the future. Yes. Okay,
because I'm all about new things, new ideas. I'm not scared of death. I'm scared of not finding out what happens next.
That's good.
Well stated.
So therefore,
yeah.
I would want to go into the future and mm-hmm. find out mm-hmm. things, and I'd also like to be in a future, hopefully, where you can switch consciousness with bodies, so that, you know, like, you don't have to deal with old age and stuff.
Yeah,
that'd be nice.
Yeah,
I like that. Old age sucks.
Yeah.
I'll go next. I would go to the past, and here's why. Because as appealing as going 1,000 years into the future is, what if there is no 1,000 years into the future? What if you jump 1,000 years into the future and you step out of your time device and go, well, here I am, and that's when the missiles hit? I feel that there's so there's such an unknown in the year 2525. You just don't know what's going to happen. So you step out and go, well, here's the future, and there's horrible monsters that are going to eat my brain. Oh my gosh, what's going on? You know, I think going to the past is safer.
Well, you go back to the past, and you wind up getting, you know, eaten by a tiny bug that you haven't been inoculated against.
Yeah.
Well, there is that, but I mean, I think the future holds more unknowns and dangers than is the past. If I can go to 1950 and watch, or better yet, I go to 1931 and hang out on the Hollywood lot and watch Frankenstein being shot on the back lot. And that'd be fun, and I would enjoy it, and I promise I wouldn't touch it or talk to anybody. I'd just be sitting there watching.
That's true. I guess it depends on where in the past you'd be. Sure. I mean, the Black Death would not be a fun
place.
Not
a good place to go. No. I'm talking about, you know, being able to go to the past and visit, you know, places and see events that happened and be able to experience it. I think that watching the celebrations of you know, VE Day and VJ Day, just being on the streets of New York and seeing all that happen would be stunning.
Yeah.
It would be something that you would just be like, wow, this living in this moment in time. I would think of it like being in immersed in a 3D movie, in a sense. Now, of course, there's dangers. I'm going to bump into somebody. He's going to drop something. It's going to cause a butterfly effect, and someone's going to die 10,000 years later. It's going to happen, I know. But I would pick the past, and for those reasons. There's just so much back there that I wish.
So to what point? Would you go back to the 1930s? When would you go back?
Where would I go back? I would probably want to go back either the I would probably want to go back to the 50s. I think the 1950s, maybe the early 60s. Mostly,
you and most conservative Republicans.
Well, mostly so I could go into a store I'd have to make money. I'd have to make 50s money. I really want to just get all the monster toys when they came out in the 1960s. I just want to get a bucket load of monster toys.
Think bigger.
Think time machine.
You have a time machine. Think bigger.
I know.
Joseph wants to go back in time and collect monster toys.
I just want to get some Sokies. I mean, I just want to pick up some monster Sokies.
God!
I'd like to go back to Dwarves and Time Bandits.
If you collect toys from the past, from the 70s, you can go download our podcast.
Go back and get the treasures of Egypt. No, I want my universal monster toys.
No, this is the original Aurora release. A Frankenstein.
Do not laugh and do not judge him. Once again, we are separated at birth. I would go straight back to 1933 and buy every pulp magazine on the shelf. I'm not kidding. Screw the future. I got no interest. As far as I'm concerned, it's only going to get worse. It's not going to get better. I have very little hope for anything. Going back to the 1930s, even going back, post World War II, post atom bomb, all that stuff.
You go back to the 30s. You buy all those magazines. You wind up buying the last issue that somebody important needed to read in order to create all the stuff that you love. That's how this goes.
I tell you, I would absolutely do that. I would be the guy that goes back and examines the popular culture. This is a small, very tiny, thing. But, there's a lot of pulp magazines that didn't survive. And there's a lot of pulp magazines that were – because so much of this comics and pulps and all that kind of stuff were literally recycled in paper drives for the war effort. And knowing what that shopping list looks like, I would go back and get that stuff.
I
wouldn't go back.
You could go back and save the Library of Alexandria, but no. you're going to go back and get pulp magazines.
Need to convince them there are pulp magazines in the Library of Alexandria.
Then it becomes the Library of Mark Finia.
That's right. Those are papyrus.
All right. No,
papyrus
that's
magazines.
Good. You know what? Everybody's got to have a dream. That's fantastic.
I'd like to change my answer. I want to go forward in time
to
find a time machine that allows me to go back and forth in time.
Yeah.
There you go. And that's, to me, that's another one of the reasons why I picked the future, right? Because I don't know what technology is going to be available 1,000 years into the future. Maybe
it could be a molten slab.
No, you're right. But that's the thing. That's to me. Yeah. It's the whole time machine thing.
Yeah.
He wanted to see what does civilization eventually become. He was a dreamer, and he wanted to know. The traveler wanted to know what is this world, this amazing world, going to be like 10,000 years from now. And he ended up in the world of the Eloi and the Morlocks, so that's pretty scary.
It is.
So there is a lot of uncertainty.
And that's another thing.
And
I am not Rod Steiger, so I couldn't kick ass like he is. And Morlocks would eat my brain. I'd be dead. Rod Steiger was kicking some major ass. I'm like, love him, man.
And the reverse of that, to come back to some of the great ideas of Simon Hawke, a priest got excommunicated from the church because he went back to see if Christ really rose from the dead or not.
Answer the Holy of Holies, man the mysteries. Yeah. Or save London after midnight from the MGM warehouse fire.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
There you go.
Grab it.
Something
Grab
important,
it.
You know?
Thank you. Thank you.
Go back in time. It would be meta. You go back in time, save all the missing Doctor Who episodes.
There's Lon Chaney movies that need to be saved. There's Clara Bow movies that have not survived.
Oh, Jesus.
There's a ton of pre-war, pre-code movies that are not around anymore. There's a
Mark Finn. I'll bet you anything that we went back in time to 1923-24, Clara Bow would probably sleep with us.
I don't have a problem with that. As a time traveler,
I don't either.
I'm okay with that. You know,
and we've devolved to the time machine hot dog.
Science,
guys.
Who do I want to go back in time and sleep with? Okay.
It's for science. No,
right.
No. That's not the mission. That's the people coming in. She knows how to get in and out of the Coke studios. She's our ticket in. Well,
that's right.
There's coin of the realm, and
so
I
now
don't
it's
have
a spy movie too.
Yes, right. I don't have 1923 money, Mickey. Right. I've got to do what I can. All I have to offer her is my body. Look,
that's it.
This is important,
it's,
you know.
I have to go to the future 1,000 years and explain to the enlightened beings why we were the way we were, and I would play them this recording.
Well, you know what? You mentioned Doctor Who, Mickey. So let's pull ourselves out of this.
Yeah, let's crack into it. Damn it.
Let's go.
We should probably mention to the home audience that I'm the only Whovian, although I prefer Hoover.
Oh, nice.
I didn't realize those were those two terms.
So,
yeah.
Doctor Who, obviously, for those of you who aren't Whovians or Hoovers and don't know,
Hoover's not a real term.
I know.
Okay.
I know.
Who bites?
I dated a Whovian, so I have some knowledge of the Sylvester McCoy years. I'm very fond of
him.
Anyway, Doctor Who, of course, is a long-running BBC British program that features a Time Lord an alien who travels around in a TARDIS, a time and relative dimensions and space device that can disguise itself as almost anything, but is stuck as a police call box. Correct me if I'm wrong so far. And the Doctor can do not only go through time, but go through space and go through dimensions and et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And while the Time Lords were supposed to be watchers, very much like Marvel's The Watcher, and not interfere, this Time Lord, the Doctor by name, found himself compelled to help. Am I close?
Yes. Yeah, you're
right.
On.
You got it.
All right, there you go.
Got it.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mickey Finn and Doctor Who.
Well, I'm actually not sure where to start because you pretty much covered the premise of the show. There's been many actors who played him because, of course, as time marches on, this started in the 60s, the same time that Kennedy got shot, actually. They've had many actors play him over the time, so they wrote into the show the ability that when the Doctor is mortally wounded, any Time Lord is mortally wounded, they regenerate. In New Who, because there's the classic Who, which has all the bad special effects and the wobbly sets. If they're outside, they're filmed on film. If they're inside, they're filmed on video. And, oh, it's so obvious, you know. And then there's New Who, which is when it was resurrected recently. And the New Who's gotten a little bit over-ridiculous with the regeneration, the powers of the regeneration. You can, like, destroy entire races with it. It's bizarre.
Really? Isn't there a certain number of regenerations he's supposed to have, like 10 or 12?
Yeah, that's exchanging, too.
Yeah,
it was supposed to be 13, but they had to fix it because they're on 13 now.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Who knew it would run this long, you know?
Because the other Time Lord of note would be the Master, and if I recall, the Master ran out of his regeneration.
He did.
And it was depicted as this horrible skull-like thing.
And stole other people's regenerations, yes.
Yeah,
right. Okay,
that's what he started doing. Yeah. Okay, so I have to tell my funny Doctor Who story just because I came to it also very, very late. I had already moved up to Austin to go to college. This was sometime in the mid-80s. And my dear friend Chris Andrews, who was a big Doctor Who fan and grew up watching it in Indiana, it was going to start airing. They were going to start airing episodes on PBS or something like that. And he had been talking this show up, and I'm going to love it, and it's going to be incredible, and oh, if I like, you know, Star Trek and this, and I'm like, okay, all right, that sounds great. So he came over, we got our popcorn, our sodas, we're ready to go, and it's the black and white Bee People episode. and it's so funny, it comes on, it starts. We're both staring at the TV for a few seconds. We both look at each other. I have a look on my face like, you have got to be freaking kidding me. And he's like, no, turn it off. Don't watch this one.
On a side note, the very first time I ever saw the Stargate TV series, they were getting attacked by bad CGI giant bees. So I feel
okay,
you.
Okay, well, there you go. But yeah, oh my Lord. I thought, no, there is no way. And then the very next week, It was the lighthouse, the haunted lighthouse episode.
Fang Rock.
With Tom Baker. Yeah. And I was like, oh, okay,
With the lighthouse keeper, that sounds like a pirate.
Yes, now I understand.
Yeah, it's like Star Trek, like Wild Wild West, like Twilight Zone. There are some very classic, perfect tales, and there are some humongous stinkers.
Oh, right.
So, Mickey, where is Doctor Who heading? What's the future of Who?
We are losing Stephen Moffat, who is the current showrunner, who wrote some of the classic, before he was a showrunner, he wrote some of the classic New Who episodes. Mm-hmm. And then once he got a hold of the show, it went weird.
I've heard people are kind of happy about him moving on.
A lot are, some aren't. I love the man as a creative force.
He did the Sherlock, the new Sherlock.
He's
too,
half
right?
of the Sherlock team.
Yeah.
He wrote Coupling. He wrote Jekyll.
I like Jekyll.
Yes, he is a phenomenal creator. I just think that maybe Doctor Who was not the show for him because it was an existing property that he tried to fit himself into. He grew up as a huge fan. He also wrote The Curse of the Fatal Death, which was sort of a Saturday Night British version of Saturday Night Live, Children in Need special that they ran that spoofed Doctor Who. And is partially responsible for it coming back because when the numbers came in from that, some people at the BBC went, well, maybe we should resurrect the show.
Right. Nice.
So
who's taking over?
I forget his name. I'm unfamiliar with him.
Oh, wait.
Who is it?
I was about to go into Adam Abbott and Costello. So who's taking over? Exactly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Huh.
I don't know. Third base.
They do have a showrunner. I've forgotten his name because I've never seen any of his work before, but I've heard good things about him.
But still immensely popular, obviously. There's a huge following.
Yeah.
Very iconic creatures that the Doctor has encountered over the years. The Daleks and the Suntarians and the Cybermen and the Weeping Angels are pretty popular. That's kind
of
new.
And that's one of Moffat's creations, yeah.
Is it? Yeah. But again, it's an exciting story. They deal with time travel, although he pops back and forth so regularly, it doesn't seem to have any effect on anything of the timeline, does it?
Fixed point in time. So sorry, can't change this. A lot of times the people writing the stories don't really know that much about time travel. And so you get weird things happening, and you get contradictions where he breaks his own rules and everything, because the show's been going since the 60s.
Well, but it's also going through dimensions, so while time, there's no linear timeline, I always thought that he could go to a different dimension a parallel dimension.
No, they're in the radio plays, there's an alternate dimension he gets stuck in, but it's all this dimension.
Okay.
Interesting. Okay.
And there's a beginning of time and there's an end of time. It goes back and forth.
Apparently there's a restaurant there.
Yes.
Really, the...
and you get some phenomenal acting scenes in the right circumstances.
Really, the best use of time travel in the episodes has always been whenever the Doctors team up from different eras.
Yes.
Those were always like the best ones. The three Doctors and then later the five Doctors. Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. those are classic episodes. I'm not a fan. I'm sort of a lapsed Whovian. And I too dated a Whovian and was compelled to watch just hours of Doctor Who that I didn't care about. Because, you know, growing up in the 70s,
Tom
Baker was it, you know, and even if you didn't know what the hell was going on, he was interesting. You know, he was very charismatic to look at. He had this interesting look about him, you know, and you could tell there was something going on. Whenever they broke it up into their four and six part chunks, you know, you weren't always quite sure exactly what the deal was, but you watched it anyways because, well, we didn't have any, you know, a lot of options. But then on either side of that is a bunch of stuff that's not so good. And that's where I was, you know, whenever
one of the classic stories is Genesis of the Daleks. And the story is phenomenal. It's got some great scenes, some great acting. There are, like, old Doctor Who used to be episodic. There are, like, two or three episodes that you could just cut out and get to the story. But it's like them wandering around endless quarries and stuff like that.
Yes. Always running and taking a left turn down that same flipping hallway. You know, it's
Mark. Who was your doctor that you were watching with that girl, with your Whovian girlfriend? Which doctor did you get to watch?
Well, she finally Peter David was. But we did get into Sylvester McCoy. And of course, for me, you know, Sylvester McCoy, The Curse of Fenris remains, you know, one of the best ones for me. So I feel like I've put in my time. You know, when people say, how could you not like Doctor Who? It's like, well, I've seen Doctor Who. I've probably watched more classic Who than a lot of the most new fans.
Right.
You know,
right. And I'm like you, brother. I've seen a lot of old Who, and Sylvester McCoy was one of my favorites I watched. I just remember one specific episode. It was a Dalek episode, and they were running. Ace and the Doctor were running from the Dalek, and he goes up the stairs, because you know they can't go up the stairs. And then that sucker started to fly up the stairs. It paused, and then like rockets shot up, and it started going up the stairs after them. And they're like, oh, run! I thought that was very clever. Then, oh my gosh, the stairs used to stop them, but now they can come up the stairs.
And for people who have never seen the show and are like, I don't know about this, I'll put something on the site that has some good starting points where you don't have to know anything about what's going on in order to watch it.
Yes.
Right, and I'd like to, and those of you listening, we've had requests where we're going to start on the site, maybe listing some of these references that we've been doing in our podcast, so you guys can look them up. I've been taking notes here. I've got some movies, I've got some TV, I've got a book, just to put them out there and let people check them out for themselves. Speaking of TV, do you guys remember a TV show around the same time of Gilligan's Island? Mind you, I wasn't alive. I saw it in reruns.
The Time Tunnel.
Called It's About Time.
No.
Oh. Oh, I remember the time.
I've seen a recent movie called About Time. But
It's About Time was the story. It was a Sherwood Schwartz, just like Gilligan's Island, same guys who did Gilligan's Island. And just like Gilligan's Island, the opening theme tells you everything you need to know about the story. So with your kind permission, it's about time, it's about space, about strange people in the strangest place. It's about time, it's about flight, traveling faster than the speed of light, about space people and a brave crew, as through the very air of time they flew, past a Roman senator, past an armored knight, past a firing Minuteman, to this modern site. See, they have two cavemen on board, and they take the cavemen from the prehistoric time, and they try to educate them throughout history.
This would make a great reality show.
Yes, right? So they actually take these cavemen, a prehistoric woman and her prehistoric mate, and they go through time, and they have all these wacky adventures. Will they manage to survive? Tune in each week, let's see, you know, that sort of thing. It's about time. And that was, when I first saw that, I thought, how cool to be able to jump around and see that. I guess that's where my history comes from. I want to go back in time and see that. To see the knights, to see the Minutemen, to see that kind of thing. But the premise here in the show was the astronauts were with two prehistoric people. And that was the comedy, of course. It was, you know, the prehistoric characters didn't know what the hell was going on. But yeah, it's about time. It's a very unique TV show, lost to history, I'd say.
And yeah. I think one more note about Doctor Who is that's how Doctor Who actually started. It was supposed to be an educational history show.
Yes, and that was it.
And they were told, no bug-eyed monsters. And, of course, they immediately go to the bug-eyed monster.
Bug-eyed monsters, yeah.
Yeah, I think they adapted the thing you're talking about.
It's About Time.
It's About Time, and they called it Bill and Ted's. Two cavemen.
Well, I would say, let's take our hats off, because two of the greatest time travelers of all time, Bill S. Preston Esquire and Ted Theodore Logan.
Yep.
I mean, these guys, they saved rock and roll. You know?
They did.
I gotta tell you, I'm not a fan. I'm just not.
Not even the sequel?
You know what? I'll tell you something. At the time, in a time and place kind of situation, that movie was fun. That's one of those I can't go back and enjoy the same way that I can with, say, Back to the Future, for example, or something like that.
It's got Jane Wedlin in it being adorable.
It's more admired to its era than its subject matter.
Yes, it is.
It really is.
Yeah. And that's
party on, dude.
And that's kind of my.
It does have Big Pig in it.
Listen, I'm glad that George Carlin got work. You know, everybody's got a house payment to make. I just want it to be better.
Alex Winter's talking about bringing it back.
I know, and I think that's a horrifying idea. I think it's some of
Keanu Reeves' best acting. I think he really does Ted Theodore Logan quite well.
All right, so any fans of Sliders or Quantum Leap?
My wife loves Quantum Leap. I love the concept. I love the fact that they were able to do that on television.
Because they were jumping through bodies, though, throughout the time.
Yes.
Like, he would show up in different bodies and have to look at himself in the mirror to see what the hell he was and who the hell he was.
It's a brilliant idea. It's cool that they were able to bring that. It's just not my type of show.
Yeah.
It has I think what I liked about Quantum Leap, well, it's one of those where if the subject matter was something I was interested in, I loved it. If he's just going back and trying to keep the guy from losing the farm, I was zoning out. You know, my favorite one is the episode where he is Elvis, where he time travels back to become Elvis.
That's lovely.
So there's just a certain there's been time travel stuff. There's more of it than you think, because as soon as you start adding up, I mean, you mentioned Stargate. I forgot about Sliders.
You're talking about TV specifically,
TV.
I would throw out Ranger 3 and its captain, William Buck Rogers, who was blown out of his trajectory into an orbit that freezes his life support system
or even
and sends
the original
Buck
book,
Rogers where... back to Earth 5,000 years later. Yeah.
Even the original book where he pulls a Rip Van Winkle, you know.
Yeah, Buck Rogers.
There was a show called Voyagers.
Voyagers
with the pocket
Phineas Bogg teaming up with a teenage Jeffrey Jones and fixing history.
That was Jeffrey Jones?
Uh-huh.
Oh my god! I need to go back and watch it.
they do things like make sure that the Wright brothers invented the airplane, and they traveled around, apparently.
They were like Sherman and Peabody.
And a device called the Omni, which looked like a big pocket watch.
Did you guys watch, just because there's two things on right now that are kind of prescient. Legends of Tomorrow, which is where we have used time travel the way other people would use Kleenex. But did anybody watch the Hulu series 11/22/63?
No.
I did not.
But I heard a lot of things about it.
It comes out.
I really enjoyed it. It was great.
It was
really good. I thought, obviously.
And of course, the man in the high castle is fantastic.
Certainly, and is a sort of that's more of a divergent timeline kind of a story.
Right. That's not really time travel. Yeah. They're getting
messages from basically an alternate future,
right?
But a different timeline. I see.
It's a different timeline, but there's still time travel involved.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're probably going to heighten it to make the series a little bit more connected, you know.
Yeah.
If you guys, it was a good book that King wrote. Everybody in it's really great. James Franco's great. The way they handle the time travel is really good. And there's just one cool little Stephen King-ism that makes it unsettling. Basically it's King's notion that time has a consciousness to it, a kind of a rudimentary sort of a sentience, and that you're not supposed to go back and alter events. And when you start pushing against the timeline, you know, his quote is, it pushes back, you know. And so with this whole idea, you know, revolving around a guy who goes back in time to try and prevent Kennedy's assassination, it's just a very well thought out mechanic. One of my favorite bits is kind of a throwaway, and I mentioned this for you, Aaron, because I really thought you'd be more understanding of my desire to go back and save Action Comics.
I got your back, Mark.
Thank you, Joseph. The guy that originally does the time travel owns a diner in the thing, and he confesses to James Franco that he's been buying his beef in 1961 and bringing it back to the present day, and that's why his hamburgers are so cheap and that's why they taste so good. It's because he's got an endless supply of cattle from this time period. I was like, oh, that's genius, you know. If a pound of beef, ground beef, is 50 cents, you know. It's got no hormones stuff. The time travel component is really good. It's an 8-part series. It's about 8 hours, but I found it very compelling. It hooked me right away, and was very satisfying. It did something that very few time travel things will do. And it shows you both endings.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So it was Clue for time travelers.
Which is very – that's a cool thing because, you know, again, if you can go back and fix it, you can go back and unfix it, you know. That's sort of the idea.
But somewhere in time you mentioned earlier, I want to bring that up again only because it had a very unique method of time travel where the character Christopher Reeve plays time travels by simply surrounding himself with the time he wants to go to. He dresses in the clothes, he puts on the music, he lays in a room of that era. He's got nothing, every sheet, every fabric, everything on the desk, every piece of paper, everything in that room is from the era that he wanted to go to. And he just laid in the bed and through the sheer force of his own will, transported himself through time.
Yeah, it's like an altered state of consciousness kind of deal.
And this is my segue into my question on this. One of my favorite short stories, and truly one that's been covered in various mediums in various forms, is the story of the occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge.
Love it.
Where a gentleman is being hung, and as he drops off the bridge to be hung, the rope snaps.
and he falls into the water, and he escapes. They're shooting at him, and he manages to get away, and he swims up, and he travels through the wilderness. He's being pursued by the enemy soldiers that were trying to hang him, and he has this grand adventure to try to get home. And he gets home. He gets to the gate of his house, and he sees his wife at the doorway. He has made it, and you're so thrilled. And as he walks towards his wife, he feels this incredible pain in the back of his neck, and bam, we're back at the bridge, and he's hanging. This entire adventure he had, this entire escape adventure, occurred from when he was pushed off the edge of the bridge until the rope snapped his neck.
In less than a second, he lived this whole thing, yeah.
So, sense, there is a sense of time travel there. There's a sense of going beyond your means, and it's all about perception, which I think is that somewhere in time notion. Mm-hmm. Truly a time travel movie. Yes, it is. Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge is more like a dimension in your brain. If Rod Sterling were here, he'd say, you know, it's a dimension in your mind, Rod Sterling. But it works. I think
what I call a coma dream.
Okay. Yeah.
Or story.
Sure. Yeah. You know, my God, the calls are coming from inside the house, and you've been here the whole time. You know, you're dead. Oh my gosh, you've been dead the whole time.
Right.
I do enjoy those types of twists on something that you think is you understand.
Ambrose.
What about? Yeah, Ambrose Bierce, that's right. What about the Kick the Can episode of The Twilight Zone, where they get young?
Mm-hmm.
Now, they don't travel through time, but time is taken away from them. They lose their time that they spent on this planet, right, but still maintain their minds.
I got to tell you, that notion really appeals to me. Well, you know, the idea of going back and starting over at the age of 16 or 17... Knowing now, you know, with 40-something years of knowledge under my belt, you know, and then basically getting another crack at it.
Well, that is one of the seven secrets of highly successful people.
Yes. Yeah. I'm going to order another round, and I'm going to ask this question for the table. Here we go. You have a time machine. But the time machine does one thing and one thing only. It takes you back in time to a point in your life where you can speak to your 13-year-old self. What do you tell yourself?
Oh, God.
You specifically create these questions to mess with me, don't you?
He really does.
You're 13, and suddenly this gentleman who looks like you do right now approaches and says, hey, son, and you don't want to freak him out. You don't want to go, hey, I'm you from the future. No, I'm going to try to give you a piece of advice, and hopefully it sticks. But what would you tell yourself?
Wow.
You're colorblind. Don't try to be a forensic expert.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people, certainly for me, it's about time wasted. I mean, I'd go back to me about to, you know, maybe going to college or something and say, all right, really apply yourself. Really start working on that story craft. Start working on the storytelling. Start really, really just honing those skills. Meet important people, go to conventions, move out to LA if you want to meet movie people, you know, start early and just work, because then if you start doing that when you're 18, 19, by the time you're 30, you're somewhere, as opposed to if you start that when you're in your late 20s or early 30s, well, now you're in your 40s and you're getting aged out of stuff.
Young Aaron, it's very important that you realize that Ed Wood is not a guide to making movies.
Yeah. No. Fortunately, I always had good tastes in film, even as a youngster. I just wasted too much goddamn time. I wasted too much time. I was going out with friends, getting drunk, you know, doing the party scene, jumping from girlfriend to girlfriend. I mean, it's like no. That's all. That stuff's not important.
Start
studying the classics. Studying story structure.
But then you wouldn't have dancing Wookiee bear things.
But that's just it. That's just it. It wasn't important. Now, when you look back, you go, you know what? I probably shouldn't have done X, Y, Z. But at that time, it was important.
Well, sure, at the time
it
was
fun. So keep that in mind. You're an old man, older man, coming now to a younger man and saying something that's going to make them change their life. And you can't say, son, don't go out and party. That's That's crazy. You don't want to do that. Study. And you're going to say, who are you? And no, you don't get me, man. You don't understand me. You're talking to yourself, right?
Right. No, I know,
so,
I know.
So what would you, how would you have reacted? I know what I would have said.
Oh, how do I convince, are you saying, without me knowing that it's an older me,
yeah, no,
how
it's
do
just
I
a
convince
guy.
A younger me? Right. Oh, yeah.
Because you don't want to say, I'm you from the future, kid.
Yeah, no, it probably would take a lot of chloroform and mind-altering drugs. You know. A lot of conditioning and brainwashing.
Your eyes pinned open with.
Yes, that's exactly correct.
You're
gonna watch the Stanley Kubrick classic.
I wouldn't have listened to myself. I know that.
I wouldn't.
If I would have said, "Look, you think you love this girl, and in college you're going to throw away a full scholarship because you don't want to be in the same school as this girl," don't do that.
Yeah.
And I want to be like, "What do you know? I love her." You know.
And you'll be like, "Kid." If you do that, you'll never meet Carrie Fisher.
Knowing that stuff and kind of with this sort of discussion in mind, I would go back and I would literally give my younger self a line from the underappreciated film The Prophecy.
Oh, okay. Love that movie.
I'm gonna try, and I'll do this as walk-in-esque as I possibly can.
Okay. All right, here we go.
Study your math. It's the most important subject. I would specifically say, with regards to the money, I know you don't think it's important. Trust me, it's important.
And here's a stack of pulp magazine from the 30s to help you on your
exactly.
way.
Exactly.
But that's the thing. But no, but
we have to do an entire episode with him in walking voice.
Yes, I thought we were going back and convincing our younger selves that we are the older self. I mean, if I'm just going back and talking to a younger me, yeah he's going to flip me the bird and walk off and do all the stuff that I did anyway. But exactly. if I could go and say, look, I am you from the future, and I could prove that somehow, then yes, I think I could have an effect.
That's tough to say. You know, I do think that 13-year-old me would think I'm kind of cool. I mean, because of some stuff that I've done and some friends that I have and some things that I know and you know, I've got books out, which is 13-year-old me would have thought that's awesome. But if there's a way to fine-tune any of the missteps I've made, I wouldn't do the girlfriend thing either because, you know, your friends can't tell you when you've made a bad choice. Only you have that internal meter that fills up. That says you've had enough of her crap, and your friends will try to fill it up for you, and they just can't do it. You know, it's an internal monitor. But I wouldn't warn against experiences, but I would absolutely try and convince. Because it wasn't until I got out of school, it wasn't until I was out of college, it wasn't until I did all that I realized, you know, I do use math every day. Damn it.
study your math.
Study your math.
Every single
different from how they teach it because you don't have a stack of wood. How big can you make the fence of your yard? You want to enclose the yard.
That's as may be, but at the same time, there has not been a job that I have had my adult life. And I don't mean like the crappy jobs like Domino's or that 3 weeks that I sold newspaper subscriptions by telemarketing. I'm talking about the good jobs, the comic shop jobs, the editor-in-chief position at Chessex Manufacturing, this job at the movie theater. Every single one of them involved algebra. Yeah, I made dice.
Wow.
Every single.
Mickey, what about you?
Yeah.
What would you have told yourself?
Wear sunscreen.
I think the sunscreen's probably that's really good advice. I've got to say,
that's an excellent piece of advice.
But no, it's probably finances.
Yeah.
Now that's now you could go back in time. I just go back in time and give myself a bunch of Powerball lottery numbers. You know,
oh, wow.
That's what I would do. Or say, hey, you know, there's this thing called Google. Start buying as much as you can.
Or
right
even
now.
On a much simpler scale, this is how credit cards actually work. Don't listen to them.
Right.
Yeah.
Don't get trapped. Well, gentlemen, the clock on the Lobot Lodge wall here says it's about time for us to do last call. Time travel, I tell you, forwards, backwards, we are stuck in this inevitable forward motion. I wouldn't mind slowing it down every once in a while, and I urge all of you listeners to think about that as well. Look around you. Enjoy your surroundings. Enjoy what's there, and don't be in such a hurry. Time is moving, and we can't stop it, so the best we can do is enjoy every possible moment we have. Mm-hmm. In farewell, Mark Finn?
Yeah, study your math. No. I'll end with a recommendation. Those of you that haven't seen 11/22/63, check it out. It's absolutely wonderful. And if you're intrigued by the topic, we did a laundry list of stuff that we all like, and it's there wasn't anything I disagree with. So dip in and let us know what you guys think on online. That'd be great.
Absolutely. Mickey?
Normally I'd sit here and make a wise-ass comment, but something that I said, let's stick a thumbnail into that and we'll come back to it. This is my last chance.
Yeah,
so
cool.
Unless I, you know, create a time machine, come back and change the way this podcast goes. But
paradox.
A lot of people think that a paradox means that something can't happen. You know, like, oh, that's a paradox, therefore that wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
What they don't understand is a paradox is something that does work, but it defies all logic for why it works.
Mm-hmm.
So you can have a paradox in time travel story as mm-hmm. long as it doesn't break the story.
Interesting.
That's where the trick comes in.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Cool.
Awesome.
Paradox. Love it. Obviously, I was just a pair of medical practitioners walking down the street. Aaron?
Well, mine's going to be a little bit of philosophical advice. Taking our whole, what would we tell our younger selves? I want to tell all our listeners, and this is very important, life is too short. Do not surround yourself with negative people. Do not surround yourself with people that discourage you or that say your dreams cannot become reality. Pursue what you love. Pursue your dream. Pursue what you love, whether it be an art or a science or whatever it is. Life is too damn short. Go for what you love and give it your all. And I think in the end, you'll be rewarded. But especially get rid of toxic people. Ditch them now, whether it be girlfriend, boyfriend, friends, family. Ditch toxic people.
Wow.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, yes. This is Joseph Otinos reminding you all that the only reason for time is so that everything doesn't happen at once.
Brothers Karamazov.
Thank you all, and good night.
Gentlemen Nerds is a production of Cloak & Dagger Studios, LLC. Music by Ben Gibbs. The sound editor is Michael Ashley Finn. Web design and cloakanddaggerstudios.com by Rustix Interactive. Promotional consideration by Mr. Fusion.
Stories that, again, you know, hope and looking on the bright side and doing it, dream it, do it, by God, do it. What was that Orson Welles told him? You know, why live a life living other people's dreams?
Yeah.
Don't let people tell you what to do. I mean, yeah. Could he have? No. He had no talent.
Right.
He had no talent. But by God, did it stop him? Not at
it
all.
It did not yeah. stop him, no.
And in fact, every single one of us know who that man is. Well, every single one of us.
Say what you want about the quality of his material. There is... at their core, a sincerity to his work.
Yes.
There's definitely a point of view and a drive. He was not a good technician. A lot of people think that Plan 9 is the worst movie of all time.
Not at all.
They're wrong. It's Robot Monster.
Yeah.
Well, I tell you what, Robot Monster is what Mark Finn said. The gorilla with a porthole on his head.
Yeah.
And I love, and I don't get me wrong, George Barrows and Robot Monster.
Yeah.
You know, the only film where the bubble machine's in the credits.
Roman. I would rather watch Plan 9 from Outer Space any time of the day or night than watch, Gandhi again.
Yeah.
Or Chariots of Fire.
Yeah.
I mean, they're great movies. You see them once, you go, great, okay, good. But have I watched them more than once? No. I've seen Plan 9 from Outer Space, 17, 18 times.
Yeah. I can't tell you how many times I've seen Flash Gordon. It's a terrible, terrible movie.
In which case,
but I love it.
If you watch a Doctor Who,
yeah.
I wouldn't normally recommend this, but The Brain of Morbius with Tom Baker may be your Doctor Who.
Oh, right, right, yeah.
It's a horrible Universal Pictures ripoff style.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably the best night of my life was the night that my ex-girlfriend got... she got a big package of Doctor Who stuff from one of these guys, and one of the things that was on it was like a two-hour interview with Tom Baker talking about the different episodes and what it was like. And it was what I loved about it. The best thing about it was, is they would bring up an episode and he would go, you know, I really don't remember much about that because we were all Polaxed drunk at the time. And then they bring up another one and he'd go, that was another one where we were all in our cups. And all I remember is that we made some horrible jokes about the trash bags. Looking like prophylaxis. You know? So
that's awesome.
She's looking for insight. I remember that. I was so drunk, I slipped off the curb and broke my arm. You know, just horrible stuff. And so she didn't watch it all the way through, but I did.
That's funny.
It got better as it went.
That's awesome.
It's like the commentary to A Knight's Tale, where they get drunker and drunker as the film goes along.
Oh, sure.
You can totally, watch the commentary for Conan.
Oh, God, that is brilliant.
Jesus.
It's Milius and Schwarzenegger hit the highest kite in a fucking recording booth, and it's brilliant. It's brilliant.
What I like is that Schwarzenegger has no memory of the movie.
That's
he's
crazy.
He's watching the whole thing, and Milius has it down to the second. He's got it down to the clock. So he's like Arnold, watch this next part. Ah, look what happened! I got drunk and hit the camel, and the camel fell down.
Yeah, it is. It's hilarious. He hadn't even made the connection. It's like he's being chased by the wolves, and he falls into the cavern and gets a sword, and he comes out, and the next scene he's wearing wolf skins, and so Milius is like, you see? Yeah, you're wearing the... Oh, I get it! I killed the wolves, and I'm wearing them!
Yeah. Genius.
He only then just understood that scene.
Gentlemen, I do have to call this a night.
Alrighty.
I have to get back to where the heavy rains come.
Thanks.
Alrighty, guys. Well, again, as always, thank you so much. I'll send this to you.